This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin. I'm Gabby Roslin.
And I'm Ricky Wilson. We're sitting in for Chris this week with bucket loads of great guests coming up.
The BAFTA award-winning George MacKay gives us the lowdown on his brand new drama, The Trick, on BBC One.
Comedy titan Johnny Vegas has us sitting on the edge of our seats detailing his new fantasy drama film, The Drowning of Arthur Braxton.
The always awesome Al Murray delves into his historic new series, Why Do the Brits Win Every War, and his new 83-date 2022 UK tour.
83 dates, wowzers. And satirical funny man Nish Kumar makes us LOL, that's laugh out loud, Gabby, not lots of love, ahead of his topical comedy news show, Late Night Mash, on Dave.
So without further ado, let's get on with it.
Dapper Dave, pray tell, who's our first guest?
He wowed in 1917, howled in Wolf, and is crying foul in his latest offering. He stars in climate change drama The Trick tonight at 8:30 on BBC One. So please welcome an actor worth watching, whatever the weather. It's the always brilliant George MacKay!
Hello, George. Come in, George.
Hey there, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. Whereabouts are you in the world?
I'm up in Yorkshire at the minute.
Are you filming in Yorkshire or holidaying?
No, I'm working up here, yeah. I'm just sort of in between Halifax and Hebden Bridge.
Oh, beautiful part of the world. I played in Halifax a few weeks ago, and Thomas Turgos was there at the gig.
Oh, no way. I'm working with Tomo.
Are you doing the Gallows Pole, Shane Meadows?
Yeah, that's the one.
There you go. Why weren't you at the gig?
I hadn't made it up to Yorkshire yet. I was down in London. I missed out.
never mind. So, how's things going? Are you excited about it going on air tonight? The Trick. It's going out tonight.
It's very exciting. It's cool. It's cool it's getting out there.
It's really powerful, though. I mean, it's a true story. So for people who miss the actual true story, this is the true story about The Trick, which is hacking and the computer hacking to do with climate change. And it was it was front page of all of the papers. And there you are bringing it to life and just reminding everybody, perfect timing with COP26 happening. So tell people about The Trick, please.
Yeah, I myself am sort of slightly embarrassed to say I missed it when it happened in 2009, 2010. But yeah, it's the story of this man, Phil Jones, who's one of the UK's best climate scientist, and he works out of the University of East Anglia. And basically, he had his emails hacked and these sort of choice sentences picked from his emails to sort of make it look like he was falsifying his data to try and make it look like climate change is worse than it is, to sort of, you know, fuel the argument of climate deniers and to sort of just ruin his reputation, basically. And it completely obliterated the sort of the trust that people had in his institution and in himself as a character. You know, this is his life's work, and it kind of got taken apart by this hacking, which then got picked up by the media at the time and turned into this sort of snowballed into this story that completely lost control. And yeah, and it put him in a really, really bad way. And it's, and the story is about kind of not just climate change and the importance of the work people like Phil Jones has done and is doing, but just kind of about the truth in general. And it's all kind of, you know, whipped up about the media and kind of where we get our news, how we get our news, what we believe, why we should believe things. It's kind of all tied up in this.
Yeah, because when I was watching it, I thought to myself, this is the kind of thing that should have been nipped in the bud, like, the next day, but it went on for months, didn't it? And like nearly destroyed a guy's life. And it's really powerful to watch it happen. And it has echoes of what's going on now and what's gone on in the past with the media and how they manipulate and stuff like that. Isn't it? It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels kind of very, very timely in terms of, like, you know, how we get our news and how that's changing at the minute. And that being so like brilliant in so many senses, but obviously kind of having to keep an eye on, you know, on that and this sort of and trust in institutions, trust in people, and kind of it looks into all of that and unpicks it in this kind of perfect storm of a story.
But also the seeing the personal side of it. I mean, his breakdown. He and his wife. I mean, they're incredible in it. Both of them are extraordinary performers. They really are. But just that watching him break down is heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking.
And also in terms of like Jason's performance as well. Like I think. I was talking with Pitt, the director, when I went in to do some, like, you know, voice recording in the post production, and it's kind of it's not the sort of way in which you often see it sort of portrayed, people struggling in that sense. It's such a kind of intimate portrayal of what he went through and how it sort of how it manifested itself in him. I just think it's brilliant and heartbreaking, and it really, you know, attaches you to. The kind of the personal side, when these stories get banded around, there's often, you know, there's a person at the middle of them and a person with a family and you really see that through the performances in this, I think.
And that's where you and Jerome Flynn step in as this fantastic double act. And what I got from it was I was kind of disappointed it was a true story, because I would like to see more of these two guys coaching people of how to in PR, because you're like these two PR guys who help him get his story across. An effective way. And I just think this would make a great, like, future TV show about how you can, like, coach people in that way. And I wish I had that in my daily life, because I mess things up terribly. But I loved your on-screen chemistry. It was brilliant. I loved it.
Oh, cheers. Well, I mean, maybe you could have a word with Pip, the director, and see if you could get Jerome and I a spin-off or something like that.
Yeah.
No, it was wonderful working with Jerome. And Sam and Neil, the characters in it, they are kind of... a kind of unlikely duo, but what I love about them and their job is, even there's a slight kind of imperfection to even that, is that they come from a world of PR, and it's a kind of about changing the direction of a story, and just the fact that this time they're doing it for the most positive reasons, and it was lovely to kind of, I thought it was quite eye-opening, to be honest, about sort of seeing the way in which a truth can be told in so many different ways. And kind of, it makes you go, wow, like, what is it then? And this, because this story is all about sort of this one happening and the way it has been interpreted in so many kind of polarizing ways.
Listen, congratulations on the trick. It's tonight, BBC One, 9 o'clock. Congratulations. Brilliant stuff.
Nah, thanks so much.
Lovely to talk to you. Have a good day.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
From wowing the stand-up circuit with his blistering gigs to pulling the heartstrings on stage and screen, he is the man. His new film, The Drowning of Arthur Braxton, is out next month. So remember, what happens in Vegas doesn't always stay in Vegas, especially when you're talking to Johnny Vegas!
Johnny!
Morning!
Vegas!
Good morning!
How are you today, Johnny?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you. I'm not too bad. Bit of bedhead. Other than that, hello, Gabby.
Hello, my lovely. You all right?
No, let's get straight in. Let's get straight into the business side of things before we have fun. No, I'm not saying it's not fun. Don't get me wrong. I watched your movie last night.
So did I.
It was great. And what a lad. Who's that lad?
He plays
the main part.
Good.
James Tarpley.
James Tarpley. He's fantastic, isn't he?
He's
a star of the future, isn't he?
He really is. Little Arthur and Big Arthur, you two together, the relationship is fantastic.
Oh, thank you. No, it was amazing, because it was... I was introduced to the writer, Caroline Smales. I'd heard about the book and I read it, and when I found out that the... we're doing an adaptation. Mm. I came in, and you know, indie films can go one way or the other. And it was a brilliant relationship on set. He was amazing. It was a shame because I didn't really get to do any scenes with any other of the cast, you know what I mean? It was just me and him in the house. But he's absolutely fantastic. And I came away from it with such a good experience.
Yeah,
I'm trying to do an adaptation of one of Caroline's books for myself now.
Brilliant. Well, I just loved your relationship. I think the relationships with it, you know, all the kind of magic aside, all the relationships, the things that I thought were amazing about it. Even like, Arthur Braxton Jr.'s relationship with Tommy Clark, the bully. I thought that was magnificent. Yeah. Brilliant, wasn't it?
Well, it's great when you get, you know, I didn't train in acting, but when you come in and do something. Hmm. And it's a really weird story. I Sophie Wright, who's in the film, I'd cast and directed her in a piece I did myself. So it's all this, like, 6 degrees of separation of how it came about, that she got in contact. But I mean, James coming in the room, and it's really nice when a young actor comes in and makes you feel like you're not a good actor.
Well,
no,
well.
You are. Sorry, it's really good. Luke Cutforth, of course, he's a YouTuber, and he's known for being a YouTuber. Was it 2015 or something? He said, right, I'm going to do a Kickstarter. I want this done.
On paper, it was a massive gamble. For it to be nominated for an award is absolutely amazing. I feel like I was just a kind of gun for hire. But like I say, if it wasn't for Caroline as a writer, if it wasn't for the Win Sofa, it might have passed me by. So I just feel very fortunate to be, you know, part of the process.
Well, congratulations
on the film getting made and it doing so well.
Well, I can't recommend it highly enough. And you can watch The Drowning of Arthur Braxton. It's on Curzon Home Cinema from November. So that's great. So you can watch it in November. And I highly recommend it.
You've got to read, when it's coming up to Christmas, you've got to read The Unwrapping of Theodora Quirk.
Right. Okay.
Which is another one of Caroline's books.
I'll read it.
I'm obsessed with it. It's great. I'm so glad that I got introduced to her.
And you're going to be in that as well?
Into a work. No, she writes how I think.
Okay.
But you... So to be part of one of the projects and to be, like I say, I made up the films doing well. I just felt like I turned up for a few days and played myself, an angry dad.
Well, what I love about you, Johnny, is whatever you do, there's an underlying seam of honesty running through everything you do. And when I was watching Caroline Glampin, I loved every minute of it. I liked it when you got drunk by accident when you were designing the inside of that camper van, when it was filmed on mobile phones. That was funny. I was in stitches.
Oh, when we went down for the big design meeting, it turned into a scar night.
So yeah, watch that again, everybody. That was amazing. It was Caroline Glampin. That was brilliant. And what a project. I especially like the bit when you told the story about how you exploded your condensed milk.
Oh, two tins of it, mate. It totally took out my kitchen. For the sake of saving £9, because I wouldn't order Dolce de Leche online. I cost £3,000 worth of damage.
Johnny, are you going to go back out on the road as well? You're on tour as well. And that's what, I mean, everyone says that you've got to, everyone in their life has got to see Johnny Vegas live on tour.
I find that massively, it kind of, I don't know what to say about that, because when I go out live, it's almost like I'm not in control of myself. But it's really nice with folk I've spoken to who go, I saw that gig and I'm seeing out quite like it, so I'm daunted because I've been away from it. I've been very fortunate. I've got to act, you know, direct, write, do other stuff. But it's really weird letting Johnny back out the bag. He's in a bag upstairs. It's shaking. He's going, come on.
It's quite
interesting, this, because we've spoken to a few people this week that are just about to embark on tours again. And there's obviously been, we won't mention it, a bit of a break in that side of people's lives. But everyone, I was the same, thinking, where is he going to turn up, that guy that everyone wants to see? And it is scary.
It's weird wondering, what is he now? You know what I mean? He's been in lockdown. What is Johnny going to be like post-lockdown? Oh, Ricky Gabbett, it's lovely chatting to you. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you very much.
Have a great
day.
Thanks,
Johnny.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's the pub landlord that knows more than a thing or two about days gone by. His new series, Why Do the Brits Win Every War, starts tonight at 9 p.m. on Sky History. So please welcome a man that always leads from the military front. It's the battle ready, Al Murray!
Morning. Al!
Morning.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Yes, very well. Yeah.
Now, Rachel is just cheering about this series. Ricky is, I am. Congratulations on it. Why did the Brits win every war? Rachel, tell Al what you've been saying all morning.
Well, I watched the first episode last night and I was thinking this is absolutely ripe to be showing to kids in school. It's like such an engaging way of teaching them about history. Were you thinking that when you made it?
I think we were a bit. And we're also just trying to come at all this quite old terms, some of it quite familiar stuff in a fresh way. And I'm really, really interested in history. I love history. And I also think it's something you can be funny about if you want and play with and have fun with. And that's what we were trying to do. And, any program where you haven't got the budget to recreate the Battle of Trafalgar, so what you do is do it in pedalos, I think is onto something.
It's just magnificent. I mean, that is the just fantastic to watch.
Al, were you always, always this, I mean, I'm talking way, way back, always this into history? Because yeah. I often think that school is wasted on the young. Because it's only in my older age that I now can devour documentaries about things, where at school I couldn't be bothered.
And yeah, but you know, you were working on being a rock star, surely, at school. You know, you haven't got time for the Romans, have you, when you're predicting a riot? I mean, I was brought up on it. My dad is really, really into history. So we wouldn't go to football when I was a kid. We'd go to sort of battlefields and stuff, which sounds a bit dusty, but we had a great time.
Well, you do certainly make it come alive, and that's really what we need, isn't it?
Yeah. I think so, because the thing always to remember about the past is the people who were living it at the time. It was happening to them right now, you know, in the way we live our lives. So if you can inject a sense of that into these old stories, then I think that's I think that's a good way of getting people into it.
And but wonderfully, you have some great guests representing our past foes, which I love.
Yeah. Like
you've got Fred Cyriacus is the French. You've got Bruno Taglioni, Roman Emperor. And John Thompson as the Vikings, that's a bit of a stretch.
Well, you say that, but the thing is the Viking is the Vikings, as we think of them, are really a Victorian invention. There was no one called the Vikings. Viking is a thing you do. You go raiding, you go Viking. And the Vikings were made up of all these disparate peoples and Norse tribes and different people from Scandinavia and the edge of the Baltic. And there are no Vikings. But the people who we call Vikings did in the end then settle in Britain. So a big chunk of the north is essentially Viking country. So we decided that because we couldn't get our hands on any Vikings and they never existed anyway, we'd get John in. He's northern.
Yeah, there you go. And did they have horns on their helmets, or is that a fallacy?
No, that's not true. They didn't have horns on their helmets. The horny helmets were invented for...
Had the great band. I've seen them live.
I prefer the early stuff. The horny helmets were invented for a production of a Wagner opera by the costume designer who stuck these horns on the helmets to make them look more spectacular. Wagner didn't even like them and said, sacked them off, but those costumes then got recycled and that became the image of Vikings. It's just not true.
Wow.
You know what you're saying about, Rachel was saying about how important it is to engage kids in history.
Yeah.
And you said, right, if you go back in time, obviously that was their present day. But it's so, everything that we do, most of the things, if you walk around the buildings you look at, the words that we use, it's all contains history. And it's a way of making it accessible to everybody. And it's not just kids. I think lots of people close off. The minute you say history, people close off to it. And then there's a show like yours and Horrible Histories, which actually has brought it and it made it fun and made us all realise that it's all about today.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, in particular, I mean, we do an episode about the Second World War, and so much of how we live now is that, you know, that the National Health Service came about because of the Second World War, because that was the deal that was struck during the time by the government with the British population, that's what you're going to get at the end of this. And so big, important parts of how we live today are direct products of our history. And, you know, I get it if people aren't interested, but I also, I'm fascinated by it, and I kind of don't understand why other people aren't. I sort of
They will be.
Why
now?
Why aren't you interested?
All massive leaps in technology and medicine happen because of wars, don't they? It's like we're cornered.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's the pandemic in that regard
it's kind of
a war. I don't like comparing. Yeah, exactly. I don't like comparing it to the Second World War, although a lot of people did last year, because we tend to compare things. The only history we know is Henry VIII from the Second World War, and you couldn't compare the pandemic to Anne Boleyn, right? So, but it's that thing of where suddenly you spend a lot of money on something and you get results because there's an emergency on. And that was certainly a thing that happened in the Second World War, but also during the Napoleonic Wars. And also during the Vikings had the best technology they could get their hands on because they wanted it for fighting. And I think that's really, that's a really interesting thing about society and quite depressing as well.
Say,
that it takes conflict to yeah, great innovation.
Well, listen, good luck with the tour and good luck with the show. It begins tonight, 9 o'clock, Sky History. Everybody should watch it. Why did the Brits win every war? Al Murray, also on tour, begins 24th of February until the 13th of November.
83 dates.
Oh, my yeah. word.
That must seem like a mountain to climb.
Well, it's quite well spread out over the year, but it's a big commitment.
What number date do you think would you recommend people come? Because at the beginning you're going to be ropey, and at the end you're going to be bored. So
pick a number,
like around the early 50s.
Tonight's the night. Every night, of right. every single date. Thank you very much.
Oh, he's good. Every night.
Thepublandlord.com. That's where you can get your tickets.
Thank you so much, Al. Great to speak to you.
Total
you
pleasure. Are. Thanks
See
for having me.
Cheerio.
Bye bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If there's a laugh to be had at a current affair, our next guest will find it. The satirical brilliance of Late Night MASH is on tonight at 10 p.m. on Dave. So here to tell us more is a man with his ear to the ground, his eyes on the prize, and his backside in the presenter's chair. It's Nish Kumar!
Morning!
Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm slightly reeling from the scale of that introduction. It's made me quite uncomfortable. I really thrive in an atmosphere of lowered expectations.
No, Nish, enjoy it. Just thrive in this one now. When do you film? Because tonight's the last one. So do you film it? Am I right? You film it last night?
Yeah, we filmed it yesterday. Yeah. We filmed it yesterday so it can be edited and go through the appropriate legal vetting procedures to make sure that I haven't, libeled anybody.
Has anything massive happened during the next day that scuppered you?
I think we've always been quite fortunate that we've never sort of, nothing has scuppered the show. I mean, listen, obviously it would have been nice to cover the fact that Donald Trump has launched his own supermarket, own brand version of Twitter. Mm. But that aside, I mean, to be fair, that story can be summed up by rich person does stupid thing. it's maybe not like the most important significant news story going on in the world right now.
It's properly finger on your on the pulse kind of stuff, isn't it? And that must be so exciting when it goes into making the show.
Oh, we're very much flying by the seat of our pants. I mean, I think one of the most extreme examples is something that happened a couple of years ago where there was a sort of impact report about a no-deal Brexit that was released during the record and people were sort of writing jokes in the back while I was filming the show and then like running them out.
That's brilliant. I mean, it's a dying breed, that kind of TV, isn't it? Like, you know,
we need this. We really need it.
It really is. It really is. There's not many of those shows around at the moment. And I guess to be quite frank with you, the amount of trouble that we and I have gotten over the last couple of years sort of tells you why.
Yeah, but you like it. Come on, Nish, you and the guys. I mean, it's such a brilliantly produced show and you all sit down and you work on it together. And then it gets, you know, people, the clips of the girls and of you, some of the things, Madonna retweeting Ellie's stuff and it went sort
of that's great.
50
that's...
million people. I mean, it's extraordinary that people see this around the world.
It's very, very exciting. You know, yesterday in the studio audience, there were people there from sort of New York and France and Hungary, people who have seen the show on the internet. It's absolutely great. We've been very, very lucky.
It is amazing, and it's a breath of fresh air because it's not just comedians coming on trying to crowbar like 45 seconds of their stand-up in there. It is literally showing their comedy chops as it happens.
No, I mean, listen, if you are a comedian that has a sort of functional 5 minutes on the national minimum wage, then congratulations, you can crowbar that stuff in. Mm. But it's very difficult if you've got like a hot take on baths for us to crowbar that into the... We will not be working your bath material into our satirical
shopping comedy. Trolleys, what are they all about? Yeah. Kind of
Why is this the last one tonight? This should be a weekly thing. It should just be on 52 weeks a year.
Well, I think it's... Well, I think there's two things going on. One, I think, you know, there's budget issues and stuff in television. And number two, I think if we did it for more than 8 weeks, all of us would expire into dust.
Right.
Because it's quite a it's an all hands to the pumps thing. But yeah, listen, it's a lovely team, and we I've been very lucky to work with some incredibly talented people.
And the best thing about it is it's a great way to actually, it's like a gateway into current affairs, because it can be quite dry. And I enjoy the fact that you make it make sense through comedy.
Yeah, I think that that's, I think people sometimes get, lose a sense of perspective over these shows and start suggesting that they influence the political conversation, which they absolutely don't, I would say. But I think one of the social utility of a sort of comedy show about the news is you take things that are quite boring and make them funny and hopefully get people interested in the serious issues behind the funny stuff.
Now, you're going out on tour. You've got Control tour. So this is, as you're starting in Hull in February, you're going on to the end of March where you end in Weymouth. I bet you can't wait.
I'm very excited.
I like the fact you bet you can't wait and you just said you end in Weymouth. Bet you can't wait.
From Hull to Weymouth.
You're going to other places in between. Some very
exciting but those are the
places.
Two main ones.
Yeah.
Well, of course. You know. Well, don't say that, because Bexhill are going to be very upset, and Huddersfield that you said that. And then Aberdeen. Oh, you are going everywhere.
I am going everywhere. I'm actually also even doing my first Irish dates. I'm doing a tour date in Dublin, which I've never actually done before. I'm very excited. It's been a couple of years where we haven't been able to do stand-up, which is just sort of the thing that I've done since I was 21 years old. So it's very exciting to be back on the road.
So is this the tour that you were going to do, or is this a new tour?
No, this is a new tour. I was sort of quite fortunate in terms of where I was in the touring cycle. I had finished up and was sort of just between big blocks of live work. And I was, you know, but then I've been doing gigs from this room, the room in my house that I'm talking to you from. You know, doing gigs on Zoom has been great. It's weirdly intimate. You don't normally see the audience's house. and you also don't often see them so viscerally, actively yawning during your set. Like, that's one of those things where you're like, yeah, that's maybe too much.
Welcome to my world.
Nish Kumar, thank you. What a joy to speak to you.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
And he's going on tour. It's called Control. Google it.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's Gabby Roslin and Ricky Wilson here with you in for Chris on this, the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio.
We've already heard from a smorgasbord of sensational guests, but still to come.
The legendary Giles Martin wows us with his work, remixing the Beatles' final release, Let It Be, for a new special edition box set.
The marvellous Mel Giedroyc dishes the details on her big, brilliant and very noisy new show, Handmade, Britain's Best Woodworkers.
TV presenter, actor and former Strictly winner Ori Aduba spills the beans on Treading the boards for the brilliantly energetic UK tour of Rocky Horror Show. And McFly frontman Tom Fletcher turns the pages of his festive new novel, The Christmasaurus and the Naughty List, plus an update on all the latest goings on Strictly Come Dancing. So let's get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
From dance floor fillers to weekly dance floor thrillers, our next guest is a man for all occasions. His latest book, The Christmasaurus and the Naughty List, is out now. So please welcome someone that knows his way around a story just as well as a samba. It's the spectacular Tom Fletcher!
Hello, oh, Tom!
Morning. Lovely, Tom!
How are you doing, Tom?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very well. Are you up already practicing your dance moves?
Well, not quite. I'm making hot cross buns for the kids and getting them ready for school. Okay. Which is obviously the most important job that I have. And then I'll be training all day for Strictly, for the whole day.
Hot cross buns in October?
Oh, year round in our house.
Yeah, see,
really?
he didn't live by the rules.
My oldest, he's on his second already.
Well, I'm very impressed, but I didn't know that they... Do you make them? Of course you do. You and G probably homemade. You make homemade hot cross buns, don't you?
I love that that's the image that we portray, but absolutely not. These are straight out of a packet from the supermarket.
Good for you. I love that. So this book, your next book, I mean, you're prolific now as an author. You're The Christmasaurus and The Naughty List. So would you put somebody on the naughty list if they serve hot cross buns in October?
Oh, well, I've just done it. I don't know if I want to put myself on the naughty list. I think I'm a firm nice lister, so I'm going to say that's perfectly acceptable.
OK, all right then. So listen, congratulations on the book. It's a complete and utter joy. And it's exactly what it is. I mean, also the characters' names. They're just, do you live in this world in your head all the time? Please say yes.
Yeah, well, the thing, so when I wrote the first, what's brilliant about when you write a book and you then write sequels, you've already kind of created that world and the characters. So it's a bit, and then you get to just play, it's a bit like playing with toys, a bit like emptying out your toy box, and then you just get to play with them and take them on different adventures and tell different stories with them. So the more books I write in this kind of world, the more fun it gets. But yeah, I basically live in this kind of Christmas world all year round, trying to think up the next story, which is great fun.
And apparently living in Easter all year round as well, with your hot cross buns.
Absolutely.
You just love the holidays. Love the holidays. The Battle of the Boyne, that's always in my calendar, and I don't know why. The Christmasaurus and the Battle of the Boyne.
That'll be the next one.
I'll work on it.
So, and also, do you know what I love about... So one of the things that I love about the books, there are many things, I have to say, but you've got so many chapters. And I remember when my kids were younger that they used to get really excited when they finished a chapter and then they'd get on to the next chapter. And then they say to somebody, you never guess, I'm on chapter 12 already. And there was that excitement.
Yeah.
You've got 41 chapters.
I feel like that now. I love a short chapter. I think the kids, you know, I've got three kids. My oldest loves reading, but even he's a really strong reader. But there's something, you know, the shorter the chapter, it feels like you're really achieving something when you get to the end of a chapter. So, yeah, I'm a fan of shorter chapters, but more of them.
I'm a massive fan of the short chapters too, Tom. It's Rachel here. Not Hello.
Hi, Rachel.
We read The Christmasaurus for my kids. We got it on the 1st of December, the year you released it, and we read it every night in the run-up to Christmas.
Oh, thank you.
Would you recommend a similar tactic with this one? How many chapters are we talking?
I think so. I think that's like we do that. We kind of have a Christmas book. And, you know, if you get it on Christmas Day, it's a lot to cram in on Christmas Day. So I think, yeah, they're the kind of things you want to get early on in December and then, yeah, read a few pages a night or a chapter a night and help, you know, build you up to Christmas.
Do you know that's a good idea? The next Christmas one, 25 chapters leading up.
Yeah, there you go.
The Christmas
advent calendar.
An advent book.
Do an advent calendar book about the Christmas.
Or an advent album with 25 songs on it.
He'll do that as well at the same time.
25 Christmas songs. Oh, let's do it, Tom. I'm up for that.
Let's do a collab.
Yeah, let's do a collab. Right, 25 Christmas songs leading up to the big day. And then the big day one's got everyone on it.
The Kaiser Flies.
No, we'll get everyone involved. We'll get like...
We played with each other before, if you actually, don't you remember? Matt and Emma's wedding.
Oh, yeah.
Their wedding anniversary. That was 10 years.
That was good. I mean,
I remember because
you remember
on Harry's drum kit and he wasn't very happy. I remember his face being like, get off my drums, but...
Oh,
like,
well,
come on, man, it's Ricky.
I was a lot lighter back then.
We have to go to Strictly because I'm obsessed. Rachel's obsessed. It's everybody, you know, 20 million people are obsessed with it. And also, Rachel, I think that you and Amy, please send Amy my love because I adore her, that you're going to be in the final. So I've predicted this.
I don't know. I mean, I'm literally taking it day by day, week by week. I mean, it is so difficult. I can't tell you how hard it is. Especially, you know, yesterday and Mondays are so tough because everything you've learned the previous week. So last week I had the foxtrot, which
beautiful.
Is, you know, everything I learned for that, the posture, the steps. It's completely irrelevant this week. I've got the salsa and it just is a totally different style. So it's literally like starting all over again.
But you've got...
Mondays can be a bit demoralising.
You've got a great teacher in Amy.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah, she's so patient as well. And she's, you know, she's been teaching my kids. And what I've noticed is when I'm particularly bad, she kind of teaches me in the same way that she teaches my 7-year-old. But it seems to be working, so...
Well, I think without a doubt you're going to be in the final. Really, I do. Even before you started, I thought you'd be in the final.
You know what? I hope so. I'm loving the experience. It's far more than I ever thought I would. And I would love to keep going just so I get... You know, I want to experience Halloween week and musicals week, and I want to have as full a Strictly experience as possible. And So, yeah, I'm loving every second of it at the moment.
You and your sister, musical theatre star. Mm-hmm. That's it. Musical's obviously the next thing for you. You can sing. You've got to write for music. Well, of course, you've written your stage show as well, so that's already happened. So you've got to... The whole singing, dancing, writing, there's no stopping you, Tom.
It's just not enough time. I just run out of time. I just don't sleep anymore.
Just have a little bit
of sleep.
I just
get all my work done when everyone else is asleep.
But then also you're going out with the band again. You're doing live gigs.
We are. We just finished the tour and then we're playing the O2 in November, which is, we can't wait.
Tom, everybody loves you. Carry on being just wonderful. And congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
Congratulations on reaching Strictly's final. But trust us. And love to the family. Thanks for speaking to us.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye.
Thanks for having us. Take care. Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
By now, he might know more about the Beatles' sound than some of the actual members of the band. The special edition box set of Let It Be is out now, and here to tell us more is a man that thankfully couldn't just let it be and remixed it. It's the one and only Giles Martin!
Giles, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And thank you for making me cry yesterday.
Oh, well, I'm sorry I bumped into you on the street.
No. Honestly, I was listening to the recordings and there are moments where you hear the Beatles talking and I had tears streaming down my face and my 14-year-old was with me and she said, "Are you okay?" I said, these moments that we're listening to, it's just so personal and you've let us into that. Thank you for doing that. I really mean it. I felt completely overwhelmed.
Oh, well, thank you. You know what? I feel so, sort of humbled and overwhelmed so that they give me the keys to the door. And so I walk into Abbey Road and I get to go through these tapes. And I just think that other people should feel the same way. And I'm so happy that you do, because it is deeply personal. And it is, you know, music does sort of, you know, make us feel all sorts of things. And I think it's great that we get a chance to actually listen and just not hear stuff.
It's so true. It's listening and taking it in. I mean, it's poetry and it's music and then hearing them all discussing with one another. And it's like listening to ghosts. And I know two are still alive, thank goodness. But it's quite extraordinary. I cannot tell you how much I loved it. And then the book as well, which is the heaviest book on the planet. It really is the heaviest book I have ever, ever, ever picked up. But you open it up and there are their words again. And it's incredible to remaster something like this, stuff that your dad did. A Let It Be box set is something that just we should all have. I know, I'm honestly in awe of what you've done, Giles.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. It wasn't just me. I think the Beatles had quite a big part in it. And there's lots of other people involved, but when I get a chance to work on this material, and I'd actually did this, and it was very Let It Be because the Beatles left Abbey Road to Let It Be, and I had to leave Abbey Road because of lockdown, and did a lot of it down at home. And it's a bit like working with a band presently. I think when you record stuff, it's not as though, you know, you record a 28-year-old Paul, and he'll always be 28 on those recordings. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's kind of like I'm working at the time. And it was a sort of contentious period. They were sort of trying to do a live album, is what Let It Be is. And then, and only the Beatles would go, okay, we've got 2.5 weeks. We're going to do a live album and we haven't got any songs yet. And that's kind of what this period of time was. But it's a window of the world. And I think the fact that you hear them talking, the fact that they're having a chat and then you start playing a song makes it just so human. And you realise the magic is actually them. It's nothing else. It's just them.
Hi, Giles. It's Ricky here. How are you doing?
Hello, Ricky.
Nice to speak to you. Does anything like still surprise you about the Beatles? Because you've been working, you know, really closely with their recordings for so long. Does anything crop up and take you by surprise?
Well, I suppose in this case, it's the sort of politics of it. I think this was nearing the end of the Beatles' career. And everyone thinks it's their last album, but it wasn't actually. Abbey Road was their last album. It's just the last album to be released. And this album's a bit like, John and Paul were sort of knew that they were going to get divorced, but they sort of tried. They were trying to go on date nights together. Mm-hmm. They were trying to, you know, rekindle their relationship, as it were. And you hear them. You hear them. There's a song called "Give Me Some Truth," which John released on his album. And, you know, he says to Paul, "Hey, you should work on the Hypocrite's song." And you hear them as a songwriting team. And it's just nice to, I suppose, yeah, I you know, I'm a bit like a goldfish. I don't really know much about these projects until I start doing them, you know, and then I become the sort of expert maybe for about 3 months.
Because I've got such an appetite to consume anything Beatles. This is perfect for me, isn't it?
It is. It's perfect. It's a prescription for you. That's what it is. It's, you know, but you know, that's the thing. I have to walk the fine line between boring the pants off people because it's just music and the people who really want to know everything about it. And I think, you know, the truth is somewhere between, you know, my daughters listen to everything from Fleetwood Mac to Arcade Monkeys to whatever, and then they put on the Beatles. And it all should be the same. It's just music. But it's nice that people want to dig deeper into this.
It's very interesting that you said that, talking about your daughters, because we were having a conversation earlier on the radio about how that every age, every generation knows a Beatles song instantly. And it's... How does that happen? How is it that this band has every generation from around the world, everybody instantly knows that it's the Beatles, and there's this sort of instant love that you have for the Beatles?
I think it's a bit like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. I noticed it when, you know, I've got Morning Eva, Morning Alice, but I had these two, just say hello to them. I was working on songs, and they immediately, as little kids, they were suddenly started dancing around to Beatles music. I think there is some sort of, I don't know, I just think they had the ability to write such great songs and be liked by so many people.
Giles, I probably shouldn't ask, but what's the next album you're going to do?
I thought you were about to say, will you come and produce that?
yeah, absolutely. But yes to both. I don't know, a lot of people, you know, you want that fine line, but a lot of people going, a lot of people break out, a lot of people go, why the hell were you doing this? That, you know, they sound good to begin with, all that sort of stuff. Everyone sort of wants Rubber Soul and Revolver. Me to look at those, and I guess that's the. But I haven't looked at those yet.
Revolver, please.
Okay, I'll do requests. Okay, Revolver's next. If that's what you're. Well, I'll do it for you. I'll send it to you.
Thank you. Yeah, just do it for me.
Perfect.
I'll send you my Dropbox link. Okay.
You just said that on a huge radio show. So good luck. I think he'll be chasing you. Thank you so much. What a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you,
so much.
Thank you both.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
She's one half of the finest double acts going and is a formidable force on her own. The new series, Handmade, Britain's Best Woodworker, starts tomorrow night on Channel 4. So please welcome the antidote to skirting boredom. Let's spend a whittle time with Mel Gedroych!
You are good.
Melanie Gedroych.
Mel.
Oh, my darlings.
Rachel says that you're very good at squeezing in a sofa.
Well,
Now, this was a few years ago, and dear Rachel and I were wrangling. It's a beautiful sofa. I believe she's still got it in the house. I hope so.
Pivot.
Rachel, do you?
I do. Do you remember? It's an orange velvet loveseat chaise.
It's gorgeous. And it's got the sort of... Does it have the flappy bits that come out of the bottom that you sort of rest your feet on? You know, the little bits that come out of the bottom that you rest your feet on?
That was the issue, Mel, was that it has those bits, but they're not flat. It was up permanently. That's why we had to pivot.
Yeah, we bevelled and we pivoted.
Was
and
this
we got
for
that
Taskmaster?
So
a real Taskmaster?
It was sort of an additional unfilmed challenge that Mel, out of the kindness of her heart, assisted me with.
Oh, you see, this was where you practised for Handmade Britain's Best Woodworker, wasn't it, Mel?
Listen up. I've got to come clean. I didn't know that much about wood before the show started.
And now?
Now I know... Not that much, but a little bit more.
You helped.
But I love it.
You did help. We see you helping.
Listen, helping in heavily inverted commas there, okay. Gabby. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Who knew that wood could be so brilliant and so exciting?
Of course it is.
I love it.
And Mel, you're no stranger to the world of artisan crafting competitions on the TV, because we do know you did a baking one. At some point.
Yeah.
But this one, working with wood, surely that takes a lot longer.
Do you know what? It was a lot louder. It was longer and also louder. Because on Bake Off, okay, there are like maybe 3 hours sometimes when a dough is proving. Mm-hmm. It's very silent. Dough doesn't make a lot of noise. So you can just hang out with the bakers. You're chatting. You're having very sort of intimate chats about all sorts of things like that. In the workshop, the wood workshop, it's literally, you're like this all the time. Because the machinery is so powerful.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, there's a whole workshop just machinery.
Which brings me to another interesting question. Because, you know, a cake takes, I don't know, 30 to 45 minutes to bake. but yeah. but a bed takes a lot longer. Was there a lot of hanging around?
It was quite... they had this amazing challenge every week, the Big Build Challenge. And episode one, as you rightly say, they had to make a ruddy bed.
I've seen it, Mel.
They had 2 days. It was so stressful. They were amazing, though. I never thought we'd get a single bed out of anybody, but we did. We got 9 beds. They were incredible.
And the time calls must have been weird. You have 40 hours remaining. Are you allowed to stay up all night if you want?
Well, the thing is, no. I mean, they have to sort of take into consideration that sometimes you see darkness on the show. We did actually film it a year ago, so it was in autumn, so the light was, we were losing the light. But essentially, they had 2 working days to do those big build challenges, yeah. Oh, I love woodworkers, can I just say. They are so mellow and so cool. And just lovely. They're really cracking good eggs,
I saw
all of them.
One arrived in a poncho. I thought, how relaxed can you get?
Chantal. Yeah. Chantal was in the poncho. I love Chantal. Michelle, the biker, who's a grandmother. She arrived on a massive motorbike. Jade, half French, quite sort of called my agent. Very cool.
I've got my favourite already.
Right, who is it? Come on.
What's his name? Begins with an R.
Rob.
No,
Rada.
Rada, yeah.
Now he is.
Oh, I don't want to give anything away, so I can't say anything.
He's something.
No spoilers.
Else.
No spoilers. But
what I'm saying, it's a great group of people, and it all hinges on that. And you, of course. No.
Do you know what? It's about the people. But also, can I just say a big shout out for Wales? We were in beautiful Wales for 5 weeks, like a sort of weird cult, because it was right in the middle of lockdown last year. That we were filming. So nobody was allowed in. Once you were in, you were there. You couldn't leave. So we got to know each other extremely well. It was like a sort of weird circus or commune.
Was it like Strictly? Was there a curse?
No pairing off. Too lovely, too earthy for that. Okay.
Woodworkers. Do you know, I did woodwork at school. I don't think they have that anymore.
Did you, Gabby?
Yes. It's all on computers now.
I absolutely loved it. But this show reminded me how much I loved it. I remember making a skateboard. That wasn't difficult to make, I have to point out.
Wheels are tricky.
Just a plank of wood. But I remember planing and jigsawing and all of it. I loved woodwork. Yeah, they should bring it back in schools.
Yeah, I think they should. I mean, I hope in some way that this show, if people find it and come to it and enjoy it...
They will find it. It's on Channel 4 on Thursday, 8 o'clock. How about that?
Yeah,
that's where they find
you.
It.
Perfect post-tea viewing, that, isn't it?
No, it's lovely.
Wow. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for making your show, because we will be tuning in. It's up Grace's street, this.
I've got to say, it gets very, very addictive and quite intense.
Well, it's fabulous. And you're on it, and they're all on it, and they're making things. What could be better? It's 8 o'clock, Thursday nights, Channel 4, Mel Giedroyc. Thank you muchly, gorgeous.
It's lovely to see you guys. Have a great day.
Bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Dapper Dave, who's our next guest, please?
From the small screen to the big stage, he's the man you call. The Rocky Horror Show is touring the UK, and you could be there watching our next guest strut his stuff as Brad Majors. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man that looks quite simply spectacular in suspenders. It's Ore Aduba!
Ore Aduba!
Morning!
Hi, mate.
I can't cope with those intros and that. You keep chanting, Ricky. Don't let me stop you.
Okay. Well, no. I'll do it after you've gone. It's too embarrassing otherwise. You like it, though, yeah? You like it.
I love it. Thursday morning.
So, how are you feeling? Back on the road? Back in the theatre doing the Rock Horror Show?
Do you know what? We're not only back on stage, but we are back on a London West End stage as of last night. Our first preview of the show was yesterday evening. We opened the show in London's Peacock Theatre tonight. It's the big gala press night. Right now, I couldn't be less gala ready. I mean, you look at the state of me. I'm wearing a tracksuit bottom. I've just been helping my wife feed our little girl, who's not a week old. And
congratulations!
I've even brushed my teeth. So, I mean, I'm ready for the night. Thank you, Gabby.
But you don't wear your stage outfit then during the day.
Well, not all the time. Okay. But But my wife is a very big fan of the corset that I wear on stage. She came to watch the show a few months ago. And she, you know, naturally, your significant other is the one that you are waiting for the review on. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, the good show was great. I really enjoyed it. And actually, do you know what? You do look great in a corset. I was like, that's all I needed to know.
You don't strike me as a man that gets nervous. You've done Strictly. You've done the SAS thing, which must have been nerve-wracking. So how's the West End stage for the nerves?
Funnily enough, I think there was a lot of our guys who were a bit nervous last night. We had had a week off. The last show that they did was in Dublin while I was away sort of hibernating, getting ready for the new edition. So I've been away for 2.5 weeks. So I think everybody was a bit like, okay, how do we do this again? I think it's a step to the left and a jump to the left. I can't figure it out.
Do you know what? If there's a song that, you know, describes how to do the dance, that's perfect.
Doesn't matter if you forget. Listen to the words. Listen to the words.
It's very helpful. And actually, even if you went wrong, the rest of the audience will know exactly what they're doing. It's magic. You know, the Rocky Horror Show, it's mad when you think it's been going nearly 50 years and people are still so mad crazy for it. And I, like the rest of the cast, we get to stand there on stage, do our thing, and we have the best time doing it. But then to look out and see 1,000 people having the time of their lives, dressed to the nines in stockings, heels, suspenders, whatever they can find, wrapping it around their necks and going wild, is like nothing else.
And the songs are spectacular. I mean, I'm letting you know a little secret here, but the Time Warp is actually our warm-up song in the dressing room before I go on stage with my band. We all stand in a circle and do the Time Warp
together. That's fantastic.
And it's, you know, you're going on at Glastonbury and there's a lot of cool people around. We have to close all the blinds, shut the door, and we're in there doing the Time Warp. The porta cabins are rocking.
Oh, I love that. They'll ask you to be in the show next. Oh,
God. So legendary. Well, yeah, you must. You must bring your experience. We could do with an experienced hand like yourself.
I could play Rocky. Okay.
The muscle-bound Rocky.
I'll tell Ben Westhead you can share the role. He's wonderful. I mean, he looks pretty immaculate. So the two of you together.
Oh, no, I wouldn't play him.
It's not been done.
Who's the meatloaf part? I'll play him.
Eddie.
Yeah, I'll play Eddie.
So
I can play that
with Joe Allen. He's pretty darn.
I don't have to work out for that one.
So listen, Portia mustn't be very happy with you because your baby daughter Jeannie was only born last week and you're going off on tour.
Yeah, doing that. Actually, do you know what? After having had her for a week and a bit, I think Portia would be the first person to go, I think it's time for you to leave now. So it's all good. You know, we had a long time together. So sometimes touring comes at a very good time. But no, it's part of the job. And what I feel fortunate enough is that Portia is so supportive. She's like, you know, this is your line of work. This is the job. And we get to share each other without feeling overwhelmed by each other like we had over lockdown. But no, do you know what? Going out on the road and meeting the audiences is like nothing else. Like I said, Rocky Horror fans are mad crazy. And it feels like a rock concert every night. It really does.
You love performing, don't you? That's absolutely, it's sort of there. It's that fire in your belly. But how did you love Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins?
There was a point during the series of SAS over the 6 weeks where I would be getting my face, you know, pummeled into mud, getting beasted by Ad Milton and Foxy, you know, going up and down cliffs along the Scottish Hebrides. And then on Monday to Friday, Saturday, wearing stocking suspenders and heels. They're like, it's a very strange existence that you're living right now, Ari. And I was like, I know, but I live for it. It was hard.
Did it come
as a
shock?
100 times harder. It was a massive shock. Nothing really can prepare you, really. If you've got no military training in you at all, then spending a week with ex-Special Forces servicemen is going to be a bit of a tango moment, you know, with a right slap to the face.
It's great hearing you talk about it because we all watch programmes from the comfort of our armchair and think, I could do that. But that's the one show. Not the one show. You've done that as well. But that is the only show where you watch it and you think to yourself, I can't physically do it. But it must have really taken out of it. You got a tattoo on your leg, didn't you? I saw that on TV the other day.
I did. You know, there was a moment during the filming where I hit rock bottom physically, emotionally, and I didn't know that I could survive through it. And I had the image of my son in my mind just not wanting to let him down. And having got through the challenge and I had extreme hypothermia and somehow survived, and the next day I felt like a completely different person. And one of the things that military always tell you is that your body and your mind have a real power and ability to recover. You just have to trust it. And Ant described me as a torch because he said, you're one of those, like, when you first light it, it's a bit dim, but the longer it shines, the brighter it gets. And in that moment, everything struck a chord with me. So I have a big torch tattooed on my left leg with my son's name in the middle.
Good luck with the tour, and our love to the rest of the cast, and of course give your babies a big kiss from us as well.
I will. Good Thank luck. You Have too.
Fun.
Pleasure.
Bye.
Take care. Right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to the best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show podcast with Sky. You can listen every week from wherever you get your podcasts. That way, you'll never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from the show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.